This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Hi, Tony Orlando. This is Mick, by the way. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL Lexington. Good morning to you. I'm here with my friend Leif Erickson.
Hello.
Good morning, Leif.
Good evening.
We're just we're prepared to have a time with you this morning. Leif, I just had the most exciting walk over here.
Oh yeah.
I was coming up Administration Drive, I think is what it's called. It's where the administration
creative.
Is.
Yeah, very creative.
And I fell into step literally with all the ROTC people. And Thursday is the big ROTC day at a lot of colleges. And I think high school too.
And you fell into step with them.
Yeah, there were like 300 of them, and they were marching up the administration drive, and they were being powered by the lungs of a young, I don't know, lieutenant or two, whatever they call them.
Right.
And they're like, you know, this is where like music, if you didn't know this, Leif, has its really really has its roots in military.
I didn't know that.
That's how they keep them going, you know? They keep them marching with songs and stuff.
I remember that from Stripes.
Haven't you seen that picture of, you know, the founding fathers with the drum? And
with the drums, yeah. and the fife, Barney
what is
fife.
That, like Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, and Bill Clinton, I think? I'm not
right.
sure.
Right, yes. It's on Mount Rushmore, which is a natural formation, actually.
Right, exactly. So anyhow, we're marching up the way, and they've got these chants going, you know? One of them had to do with something about a yellow ribbon, you know, having been and I got a yellow ribbon in June or something, mm-hmm. and this and that, and you know, so I finally realized it was that strong connection between the military and the yellow ribbon, which goes back to Tony Orlando and Dawn's song.
Everything does
exactly. Fortunately, it goes back to an Italian American immigrant with a pair of you know, backup singers who weren't sisters, but you sort of thought they were anyway.
Dawn,
just a
one name. Thing
and
on.
so back to their song, you know, this they're the taproot of all the yellow ribbon stickers and all the yellow ribbon everything.
Right.
It's too bad that song's about getting out of prison.
Oh, it's not about coming home from war then.
It turns out if you just listen to it, yeah, that it's about getting out of prison.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well. Which one of them was in prison? Part of Dawn or Tony?
Well, they're all in prison now.
Oh,
but
little known fact. This is Trivial Thursday, so little known facts are our specialty here. I thought Dawn, when I was a kid, I thought it was D-O-N. I thought it was another person. It never occurred to me that there were women singing in the background.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, well, you know.
Tony, and you're like, why didn't Dawn get his last name included, too? It's like Tony Orlando and Dawn. Dawn who?
It's like Cher, just a one-name celebrity, probably. I never gave Dawn their credit, and I feel really bad about this.
One of them's name was Thelma. I just remember this from the TV show. They had a TV show. Yeah. It was the Dark Ages. It was the 70s, the variety show era.
Well, that was pretty dark age.
Yeah. If you were momentarily triumphant in the world of pop music, you might get your own variety show.
Right. Well, Glenn Campbell had one, right?
Glenn Campbell had one.
And of course, Sonny and Cher had one. Who else had variety shows that were...
I'm sorry. Thank you for calling, caller. I have to tell you that our staff is completely on vacation, and so there's no way we can answer the phone. So what I'm going to do to you right now is not intended as disrespect, but I have to take the phone off the hook so that the phone's not ringing in the background, okay?
Do it. We're
so,
all very excited.
Thank you for calling, caller. Okay.
I think that was Dawn calling to protest.
Dawn.
They're both on the phone. How many were there? Two?
Two, yeah.
Okay, they're
two.
Both Thelma and Louise calling. Not Louise?
I don't think so, but okay. It sounds kind of right.
I remember they were singing as they went off that cliff holding hands. It was a very exciting time in history. Trivia. Did I mention this is Trivial Thursday?
Well, see, they would kind of play Tony Orlando as the boob, if you will, you know, on the show. So in the skit. So for some reason, you know, he would interact with them. And I just remember that one of them's name was Thelma. And, you know, they were always like, Tony. Bonehead.
How do I not remember this?
Yeah, how do you know?
Well, probably because my grandfather, where I watched a lot of TV, he was always watching Hee Haw variety. So I think we probably didn't have time to turn over to Tony Orlando.
Hee Haw holds up incredibly well, I have to tell you.
Does
I've
it?
Watched it somewhat recently. My 5-year-old is kind of transfixed by it.
That's about the right age range, I think.
It's really, it's surprisingly rapid fire for a show from that era. I mean, you know, like Laugh-In did it too, but like, it's just like bang, bang, bang. All these things are happening. No skit is longer than like 20 seconds long.
Yeah, if I put on a pair of overalls, I'm Junior Samples. There's
Samples.
A Hee-Haw reference for you people out there. I know y'all were waiting. When are they going to make a Hee-Haw reference?
Junior Samples is my nickname for my daughter, actually. because of there's kind of a pun in there. Junior Samples is like, you know, the little version of me, like
yeah,
Sample.
Yeah, makes sense. Mini-Me, yeah.
Yeah.
The original Mini-Me, Junior Samples.
Aside from that, she bears no resemblance to Junior Samples from Hee Haw.
I don't know. Are you sure about that?
Not yet.
Okay. Because don't sell her short. She might have a career as a Junior Samples impersonator. Have you seen any of those? The market is just ripe for that.
Right. Yeah. This is Trivial Thursdays. I'm here with my man, Leif Erickson, and happily so. And thanks for tuning in. Coming up in a little bit, we're going to get to visit with Becky Alley, who has a new show opening. She's a magnificent art supporter in Lexington, both a gallery curator as well. And again, does a lot of sort of hard nose to the grindstone work for the arts. But we're real fortunate because coming up real soon, people get to see some of Becky's art, a show she's doing called American Mortal. So we're going to hear about that. And then later on in the show, some of the organizers of one of my favorite, this is favorite festival season for me, which is to say the Roots and Heritage Festival just happened,
that
which I
great.
Adore
mm-hmm.
and was there every second I could be there. And coming up is Festivo Latino downtown, which will attract tens of thousands of people. And so Sarita Begley is going to be here. We haven't gotten to visit with Sarita in a while, so that'll be fun. And possibly some of the other organizers of the Festival Latino.
Cool.
We got a few extra minutes here to, you know, kind of crack wise.
And we got trivia.
We do.
Folks, we got trivia right here in River City.
Right.
Lots of trivia.
We mentioned, like, as long as we sort of had the vaguely, you know, today's like, you know, ROTC day, so that's a good day for...
Is it ROTC day?
It is. Thursday is usually that.
Oh, you mean like the day of the week?
Yeah, is this okay. Not true? You teach it at LCC, right?
BCTC, excuse me.
What did I say?
You said LCC. They will send people over here to correct you.
What I meant was LCD sound system.
I teach there, too. Yeah, I teach part-time there. I'm North American scum teaching with LCD sound system. It's fun.
Isn't it ROTC day there on Thursday? Don't you see people in uniform?
No, not at BCTC. Not that I've seen. Okay. I don't know though. So
it's been a Thursday thing like forever.
Okay.
Like I remember in high school, that's on Thursdays. ROTC enrollees they suit up on Thursdays. They wear
maybe
their
because
uniform.
It's named after Thor, and you know they got the mighty god of thunder thing going. You know?
I don't understand, but
Thor's day.
I'll pretend to. Right. Okay.
Right,
now
yeah.
I understand.
Yeah,
it wasn't
yeah.
that much to not understand, but
it's his own day.
Right.
Thor. There's actually two women make up Thor, kind of like Dawn. Nothing.
Oh,
never
my God.
Mind.
Wow. Okay. I was like trying to, I was like, how did I
don't
miss this?
Don't hurt yourself trying to figure that out. It's not worth it.
Let's see. So, but is it Oliver Stone's birthday?
It is Oliver Stone's birthday. 1946, as the old folks say, 1946. Mm-hmm. He was born. He's got a movie coming out about Snowden called Snowden.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Is in it. I assume he plays Snowden. I haven't read anything about the movie, so I'm not sure. I just know it's coming out.
It's not it's not a musical, is it?
I hope so.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think it is.
There's less likely musicals. They could do it.
That's true. It was just an Evil Dead musical, which is probably more likely now that I think about it. Not less likely. I apologize.
Oliver Stone did Born on the 4th of July. He's done some war movies.
He did JFK.
Yeah.
Yeah.
JFK, a movie that's sort of designed to confuse people in some ways, because it's by Oliver Stone's own admission, it's partially fabricated.
I didn't know that.
But it's absolutely presented. You know, I don't know. It's just he sort of did it on purpose. It's like it's kind of maybe to sort of make the movie its own piece of performance art, where it's like, well, it's kind of true.
Even Oliver Stone fans have, you know, you usually do that thing where they go, oh yeah, Oliver Stone. Well, I like him. But he's, you know, kind of out there.
Yeah. Well, he's going to be way out there for this movie. Where's Edward Snowden these days?
In Russia, actually. Okay. His visa runs out in next August, actually. So
He's got a year.
He's asking for a pardon from the president, which is odd because he hasn't actually been convicted of anything yet. So I'm not sure how that would work. But President Obama said he has to come back here and stand trial first. For what, you know, he's calling himself a whistleblower. Other people are calling him a traitor.
Does our country make a pardon for being disappeared and never ever seen again?
It's called the Jimmy Hoffa pardon, actually.
Because that's what I'm most afraid of for.
Oh yeah,
for Edward Snowden.
Yeah, I think
I think at this point, like maybe your best move, like he's you keep super high profile. I'm here. Hello, everybody. I'm here again today.
Hate me if you want, but notice me so I don't disappear.
Yeah. So anyway.
But yeah, that's coming out. Snowden with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I can't wait for that.
I don't know anything about it except that if I know I want to see a movie, I try not to know anything else about it.
I think that's a good idea.
Go in blind.
I want to see that guy's story. I'm completely fascinated by that guy's story.
Yeah, and you talk to any random person, and you're going to get an earful of opinion about Edward Snowden, of good and bad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's see. I think I've got a song on deck here for today's a special day on a whole nother occasion, right? We're all rich today.
Yes, today is free money day. Free money, free money. This is in quote honor of the Lehman Brothers going bankrupt this day in 2008. And 2011 was when Free Money Day started to commemorate that special occasion of the $600 billion Lehman Brothers going bankrupt in 2008 when everything, well, did what you would expect it to do with the system run like that system was run.
Hooray!
Yay!
Here's some music from Georgie Fame to help us all celebrate. There we go. Okay, now we can talk. The theme to... Oh, God, that one's really good, too. We're going to come back to that one. You couldn't hear that. That's the Lost in Space theme. We'll come back for that one. We had the theme to Green Acres.
I always thought it was funny that
Eddie Albert and Ava Gabor, I believe.
Ava, yeah, not Zsa Zsa.
No, Ava's but the sister. Gabor sisters, who were they were like the Kardashians of their time, really.
That's actually true. Was it
misbehaving
Zsa Zsa?
A lot of ways in the public eye?
Yeah,
and just being the ultimate sort of classic. Don't you know who I am? Sort of thing. I think Zsa Zsa Gabor, her sister, like slapped a cop one time.
That's what I was trying to remember. Yeah, slapped a cop. Yeah, which is usually a good move. That usually gets you in good with the police if you slap them.
If you like to get shot, it's great.
Right. Yeah. you know, that song always cracks me up from the show because they're having this argument about the virtues of the city and the country.
A lot of people may not know. So Green Acres was a 70s show, and it's about a married couple.
Right.
The man is a farmer and the woman is like a socialite.
He wants to be a farmer, actually.
He wants to be a farmer.
They get married and she wants to live in this. She says, New York is where I'd rather stay.
Yeah.
I get allergic smelling hay and all this stuff. And he's like, but there's these good things about the city. And they have this little argument in the song. And what ends the argument, folks?
You are my wife.
And she goes, goodbye, city life. Like, that ends the whole discussion. Different time, thankfully, than now.
So why did we play the Green Acres theme?
Remember. Because Green Acres came out today in 1965, and so did Lost in Space.
It may be on some obscure. I was going to say it's on some obscure TV rerun channel, but who even watches? Do people watch TV? I don't know if people.
People still have cable.
Maybe they watch it on YouTube and stuff.
You could probably find it on YouTube. Yeah. Or at least
but
clips.
As we were saying before, it's not really all that funny.
No, it's like the same three or four jokes. If you like those three or four jokes, then tune in. It's kind of like the Flintstones. I'm going to get killed for this. But, did Barney do something that the ladies don't like, or Fred? Oh, well, that'll be a surprise. They go down to the Elks Lodge and bowl. That's going to be good. And they probably have a misunderstanding, the Flintstones.
Now, let's see. I think before that we heard... one last thing about that. There was also a show that I get the two of them really mixed up because I was a little kid, but these would be the shows that it was okay to watch. I do remember their sparkling sort of Technicolor. They were in this really kind of smeary, oversaturated colors. But so Petticoat Junction was a different show.
Yeah, I get them confused.
But they seem like the same show to me.
One of them takes place in Hooterville, which is funny. But I don't know which show takes place in Hooterville. I think it's Petticoat Junction.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Or which show has, in the intro credits, I think it's Petticoat Junction, has the girls bathing in the water tower.
Yeah, that I believe that's Petticoat Junction, yeah. You know, they had all these country shows, these hillbilly shows, you know, Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, Green Acres, Hee Haw, and then there was this backlash against them, and they all got canceled and just canned.
I wonder if those shows were designed to try to appeal to, like, a more I don't want to say provincial, but the more just like rural people.
I think it was, yeah. But then everybody's
like, because like Family Affair, you know, I remember watching Family Affair and I couldn't figure out how Buffy and Jody lived in an apartment.
Yeah.
Like, don't you have a whole house?
Apparently not.
Anyway. We're musing on shows that didn't, our guest Becky Alley's here, and she was not even a twinkle in her mother's eye when these shows came out. I don't make those kinds of age jokes lately, but it's true. That's not to say that you couldn't have seen them. On
I've
TV time or something.
Watched Hee Haw.
Hee Haw, yeah. Very surreal. Hee Haw's a peculiar show. We were talking about it earlier.
They got jokes.
I watched it every Saturday night.
Yeah.
When I was little.
But. It's like rapid fire. There's a lot happening in that show.
Variety show, yeah. I know.
A lot of one-liners in the cornfield, folks. And that's not a metaphor. That's actually what happened.
Mm-hmm. Becky, we haven't seen you in a while. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You've got all kind of, let's see, I hope I don't embarrass myself here. Bolivar Gallery?
Yes.
Boulevard Gallery?
Yes.
And you're still involved, right?
That's where I work, yeah. I'm the director of that. Yes, still there.
Don't you like the way, I've got, I'll just put it out there and risk everything, my own embarrassment mostly. I'm so glad. Like, you could have been like, well, actually, I'm gone from that position.
Well, no, I'm impressed. No. You interview people all the time, so it's hard to keep it straight.
It's but a cool space. That space is over in the how do you pronounce the word, SA/VS?
We call it SAVS, but it stands for School of Art and Visual Studies.
That's in that really cool old building right there.
I love the curry goat.
Yeah, it's an old, I guess, warehouse, and they've renovated the inside and put a really nice gallery in there, which is now where I work. So I'm
renovated is such an understatement. I mean, for what they
gutted
did over
it.
There.
Yeah.
I've only been over there 2 or 3 times. And this is a building that people can come visit, and we'll talk about some opportunities for them to do so. Mm-hmm. But it is a triumph. I call it a triumph in many ways.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's highly sort of eco-friendly. I think that's a completely backwards term.
Yeah,
I think the new term is
sustainable.
Green.
Yeah, or like what's that? Lead certified. Platinum, double platinum.
You know, BCTC.
Triple platinum, I don't know.
We were talking about BCTC earlier. Our new campus, the only new building on that campus so far, they're building another one now, but is like an award-winning LEED certified, like sustainable, I don't know all the terminology, gold standard, whatever it is. It's like a leader in that thing, LEED or leader, get it?
I knew what you were trying to do there.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's like
they're not going to tear down, you know, over there, sort around Loudoun and Loudoun and Newtown Pike is my favorite part. That's part of the BCTC campus, right? I call it Zombie Land.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes we call it Groundhogsville.
Yeah.
Or also Jonestown.
So you're talking about when you go across Loudoun from the BCTC's, the main Newtown campus now, you go across Loudoun and go down, there's that whole
through
village
the tunnel
over there.
The village over there.
Yeah.
We go for bike rides over there.
Yeah, they
and
can.
It's there's so many groundhogs over there.
Yeah,
and every time you come over there and they're like, what? What are you doing here?
Eventually, we're going to inhabit that entire, the whole thing, one building at a time. You know, the whole campus is going to move over there eventually. Except maybe some stuff there where they can't replace the labs because it's like too expensive and too involved. So we might have a few science-y things at Cooper or Leestown, but pretty much the whole college is going to move.
If the whole college moves there and I find that tunnel blocked off and the gates closed, I'm calling for help, okay? Because there's some boarded up windows over there and it looks kind of like Jonestown.
Yeah, they should have a fundraiser, like a zombie village there. Like, you know, Danville just had a zombie thing because of Walking Dead.
Well, not Danville. Cynthiana.
Oh, is it Cynthiana? Yeah, my bad. Yeah. Sorry, Walking Dead,
They've
folks.
They've got that mural and everything. Yeah.
But now these are things that the SABS building doesn't have to worry about. They've pimped that place up.
Yeah, we're.
This is on. Is that, We've been through this before. Is it Bolivar?
Yeah.
Bolivar mm-hmm. is how they say it in Lexington.
I mean, I've heard people, I don't actually know the official, I don't know. That's what I say, Bolivar. But I've heard it multiple times.
Well, my dear, I'm from Western Kentucky in Owensboro. And in Owensboro, we have a Bolivar Street.
Well, that may be right. I don't know.
In Owensboro, it's right. You're mm-hmm. darn tootin'.
Darn tootin'. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so this place is I think it's one of the crown jewels of UK facilities.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and you've got mm-hmm. the gallery there, the Bolivar Gallery.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that you all started kicking it at the Bolivar Gallery about a year ago. Is that
about
right?
About a year ago. Yeah.
How's it been?
It's been great. It's been really great. And we've got some really interesting shows lined up. What started happening is our gallery programming is really linked with our visiting artist programming too.
Yes.
So a lot of our shows that we bring in are from artists outside of the area. So we have a couple of shows right now. One is an artist by the name of Tia Simone Gardner, and she's fascinating. She is currently working on a PhD in gender and women's studies. She has an MFA in studio art as well. And her studio work and her dissertation that she's working on now are about black feminism and gendered and racialized spaces. And it intersects with the field of geography in fascinating ways. So anyway, that's
how does that work? How do you do that?
How do you, well,
with like geo something or the other?
Well, and I'm probably going to misspeak because I'm just now kind of learning about how fascinating geography is. Because yeah. I always assume this is me, someone who doesn't know anything about the field of geography. So I apologize to people listening that do. But you know, I assume for a long time it was just maps or, you know, some sort of literal, you look at a chunk of land and you see the boundaries and the borders and stuff. But actually, I'm learning that the discipline of geography is much more complex, and they can do, they can study people and geography of race, of class, of all kinds of things like that. So it's not just this kind of literal mapping of dirt. It's really understanding of place and what place means, and it can mean different things, and it's super interesting. And I wish I knew more because I could probably speak more about it.
Well, I'll tell you this, there's a lot of drinking that happens. I know from personal experience in a number of locales that geographers are maniacs.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see that coming necessarily from me or just in general, but if you want to have a good time, all I'm saying is hang out with some geographers.
No, seriously. I totally believe it. They're... Yeah, I'm into it.
Have you suggested that she study the Green Acres song? Because you have gender issues in there. You
I know,
are my wife.
Right?
Also geography, city and country. This could be the backbone of her dissertation. You let her know that she could talk
I
to
will.
Me about this.
I will let her know.
Please
for sure.
Do. I want to help.
She'll find it fascinating.
So this show by, remind me of her name?
Tia Simone Gardner.
Tia Simone mm-hmm. Gardner. And mm-hmm. is that coming up?
That's currently up. It's up through October 8th. So that's up. And then there's another show in there by an artist named Bob Warner or Robert Warner.
Okay.
And he is part of this male art tradition in New York City. There was kind of a famous artist, Ray Johnson. I don't know if you all have heard of the movie How to Draw a Bunny. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
No, nor can I draw one.
Oh, well, it's a great movie. But anyway, there was this male art sort of movement in New York City, and Ray Johnson has passed away, but Bob Warner was one of his primary correspondents. And they did all of this stuff through the mail. And
I love that.
I love it, too. And if you come to see the show, what he ended up doing was sending the gallery notes and objects through the mail that have been installed in conjunction with an installation class that's happening in the department. So the students really kind of completed the installation. But it's just this really it's like sincere gesture. He's really interested in connecting with people. not only did he send things through the mail to the gallery for the show, but he started corresponding with me personally and sending me things. And then I would respond that I liked something, and he would send me more of that.
Nice.
He's been corresponding with Miriam Kindly, who's a new art history professor who actually brought him in. But they've had a relationship for years, and he corresponds with her. And he's really interested in kind of connecting with people, getting to know people, and doing it through these sort of old-timey, old-fashioned, you know, printmaking and drawing techniques, collage, and it's really neat. So anyway, both of those things are in the Boulevard Gallery right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, all of this, you're doing all this, and then at the same time, I don't know that anyone has gotten, or that too many people have gotten to see any of your art.
My art? Yeah, no, I...
Many of the time, a lot of the time that you've been on the show, you're on the show as a curator, mm-hmm. or as an administrator, mm-hmm. which are very valuable things in the art world. A lot of people, including myself, don't always understand that well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's if there's the people that you take into art galleries who are like, man, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. What they probably extra don't get all of the crazy work that goes on behind mm-hmm. the scenes to curate and administer art and shows.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people who, or I don't know, I'm guessing here, I'm wondering if some of the people that become involved in those kinds of careers, I wonder how often they're also artists.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think it's more and more, let's see, I graduated college in 2000 and then went to grad school after that. And at the time, there wasn't a defined sort of path for artists to become curators or gallery directors, things like that. Although people, I think in my generation, and I'm sure before that, there were a number of artists that sort of went in that path. And now there is kind of a recognized phenomenon where there are people who are artists that also want to go into doing that. So it's more, I think now if there is a young artist who wants to do that, there are more kind of programs and things set up to kind of set you up on that path. But really, me and a lot of people like me kind of figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
I went to undergrad and grad school for studio art and then just picked up experience here and there working in galleries because it's something I like. I'm a planner. I'm an organizer. I'm one of those weird artist types that actually likes administrative stuff. And also my work is really installation intense. So just working, pondering the gallery space and figuring out how to hang things and stuff was always part of my creative practice. So
it's legit.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a producer for music. I mean, is a very valuable role, even if they're not playing music.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, George Martin, you know, what would mm-hmm. the Beatles be without George Martin?
Mm-hmm.
And it's behind the scenes stuff, administrative, you know, getting the word out. It's
yeah.
getting the art out there, you know.
Well, and as a gallery director and curator, the space where I've always lived, and not every curator is like this. They sort of have different points of view, but as an artist myself, my first priority was having a good relationship with the artists and taking care of them, understanding their work and taking care of their work. And I don't know, I think there was just some, I had a particular ease working with the artists,
mm-hmm.
You know, and different curators sort of come from different camps and have different ways of working, but that's always been my way. I like process. I like talking with the artists and working with them on I don't know, presenting their work in the way that they want
mm-hmm.
and kind of honoring that.
So do you have any tips for the curator of the Moreland Gallery? I'm just kidding.
No, she can teach me all kinds of things. Andrea Fisher.
Because now you're
amazing.
The chairs. You're switching chairs now. You're gonna,
I know. Now I'm the artist.
Yeah, you and Melissa Vandenberg
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
are opening. It's called American Mortal, right?
It's called American Mortal.
I love the name. I don't know what's going on, but that's
yeah.
such a powerful name.
it's a 2-person show at Moreland Gallery at Transy, and it opens tomorrow night, 5 to 8. Friday, along with Gallery Hop. So if you're out hopping, you can hop on over. The show both Melissa and I, in very, very different ways, and you can come see, deal with notions of mortality, patriotism, memorial, and really feminism and and the notion of women's work. We deal with all of those themes kind of in different ways. So how
did you all find each other, I suppose you could say?
Well, Melissa is someone who, as a curator, I have been interested in for years since I've been here. I've been in Lexington about 6 years, and I've worked with Melissa a number of times on creative projects and things.
Okay.
And I always...
But as a curator.
As a curator.
Now, what, also her being a curator, too? You know, I love the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Well, poor Andrea Fisher. I mean, I don't know if this is a blessing or a curse. Maybe it was both for her. But I'm a gallery director. Melissa is a former gallery director and still curates some. She teaches studio art at EKU now, but she was a gallery director as well. So you've got three gallery directors working on the show. And I'll just say we all had lots of ideas, so it was really fun. But yeah, Melissa has a background in curating as well.
Okay.
But her work, I've always been interested in it as a curator, and I think on a personal level, I just saw a lot of myself in it. She curated a show one time at Loudoun House that was called More is More, and it was all about multiples and repetition and things like that. And I was like, Melissa, you have no idea. I would want to be in the show if I didn't work here. and I just... There was just a lot about her sensibility and the ideas that she was interested in that related to the things that I make.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really made work since I've been in Lexington. So people don't know that part of me. And I don't know, when I kind of got...
What do you make? You said the things that you make. And I like your use of that word.
Mm-hmm.
It made me picture you like on the cross-legged on the floor of your house or apartment, like sort of like building things.
I do that. Well, the things that I have in the show are pretty representative of things that I make in general. But the I'm interested in material and process. So what I often do is and in the idea of memorial. So the pieces in this show are all war memorials in some way. I've got five different pieces. Four of them are specifically memorials for the war in Iraq. And it's literally, every piece is literally counting people that have died or have suffered as a result of war. So they're these meditative pieces on loss and suffering. And when I say I use materials, I like to think about materials that have an inherent meaning already and sort of capitalize on that. So I have one piece called Fallen where I collected leaves and then counted them, one for every U.S. soldier that's died in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I've got one piece that is matches that I burned and then installed, and it sort of looks like a landscape or a chunk of earth in a way. But it's 112,000 matches, one for every non-combatant civilian that's died.
112,000 matches.
And that is the most conservative estimate. The crazy thing is that there's an estimate.
I'm telling you, lost count.
There are people that have died.
Oh, man, I got to start all over again. I'm just kidding.
Well, no, the count... I am... the counting bit is a little... I can be a little tightly wound in certain ways. And the counting... is I think discipline and meditation are certainly part of my process, and you can see that in the work, in the counting. The counting, I was exhausted. It was hard. It wasn't like this romantic notion of the artist in her studio feeling energized every day. I mean, it was hard work, and it kind of drained me.
But, yeah.
Especially because the content I was exploring was counting people that have died, so it was it was hard, but it's meaningful to me. So.
Becky Alley is here. We're going to take a little break and come back and talk about Becky's show, American Mortal, which is a two-person show with Becky and Melissa Vandenberg, which opens tomorrow at Transylvania University's Mortal and Gallery. And we'll be back with Leif Erickson. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. I'm your host, Mick, and we're going to take a little break and come back with news from the University of Kentucky Journalism Department. So, won't you stick around?
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
And I, of course, have incredible respect for that.
Yeah, of course.
Before that, Oh Astronauta by Baden Powell, the I believe Brazilian guitarist, and I played that because of there was a little bit of space trivia, which I always like to catch. There was a Russian. Did you say there's a Russian? The Russians, we got our education on space exploration is so deeply skewed.
Cosmonauts.
The Russians did a lot of things before we did. We figured out ways to phrase it in such a way that suggests John Glenn, the first American in space.
Well, we were the first on the moon, if we were on the moon. You know, there's that whole thing, that conspiracy thing. But, you know, the Ford Mustang, I'm glad you played that because I can't remember the year, but on this day, Ford Motor Company started putting 8-tracks in all their cars. And you had to go to the auto place to get 8-track stuff because there were no 8-tracks in homes at that point. They were in cars first. There you go. Some trivia for you.
So, wait. So, first of all, I'm surprised that 8-tracks haven't made a comeback. Robert Beatty, who was so fantastic as an early adopter of obsolete technology, to quote my friend Jim Shambu. I'm surprised. Robert probably has done stuff with 8-tracks, but so.
Well, magnetic tape is great for preserving things that where the sound quality doesn't matter, but it's like, you know, after a while, I mean, very soon, actually, the hiss sets in. Of course, with 8-track, you have to do all that weird. You can't just go to another song. You have to go to the other side. I don't remember the setup.
Was
I had an 8-track.
Magnetic tape in the 8-track?
Yes. But it wasn't like a cassette where you could just go fast forward and rewind. That was a big innovation.
It's a big loop. It's divided into four chunks. It's divided across the tape. So they thought it was a really economical way to distribute things across less tape. You could use less tape.
Right.
But the problem was you have to click across, for some reason, 4 tracks, not 8, which is just occurring to me right now. It's called an 8-track, but like it would 4 times in the course of the music, like songs would fade out and then the thing would go, ka-chunk, ka-chunk, and then it would fade back in the middle of a song. So as long as you're okay with that, and why wouldn't you be?
if you were wanting to listen to a whole album and you didn't mind those ka-chunks and pauses in the middle of the song, 8-tracks were great. And the hiss and the fact that they broke easily and got dirt inside them. Other than that, though, they were great.
So Ford was putting them in Mustangs?
I think all their cars, their new cars,
somebody
whatever
had that great
year
idea.
That was. Yeah.
But they didn't make them for home use.
Not at that point.
You can still find
later.
Tons of 8-tracks at like yard sales and stuff.
I've got an 8-track player. It sometimes eats the 8-tracks, but I've got to get it cleaned, I guess. But
get more 8-tracks. Just go get more.
That's true. Yeah. Well, they're similar to carts that radio programs used
very
to use.
Very similar.
Because they were on a loop, and they look like 8-tracks, and you put them in there, and they play the commercial, and then it loops around again or whatever.
So how many years were 8-tracks, like, the thing?
That's a good question.
Well, when did this happen?
It was in the 60s. I'll have to look it up exactly. I didn't get the exact year.
So, you know, like a decade is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, because then when cassettes came out, you know, it was like, ooh, cassettes.
They were out at the same time because I was a member of Columbia House Record Club. Mm. And you could get your music. When I was a little kid, when I was a little kid and got robbed by them, like so many other little children who signed up for this thing where you get, what is it, 20 records for 1 penny.
Right.
Right? Do you remember this deal?
And then you're on the hook.
Oh, yeah.
And then plus shipping and handling, that's $37.
and every month we're going to send you something you don't want, and you're going to have the wherewithal to send it back in the mail and not forget it, or you'll be charged, and then
your parents are just on the hook for all this. But anyway, so in the early days of that, you could get your music on a vinyl record.
Right.
That was one option. Or an 8-track, or a cassette, or, are you ready? Wait for it, reel-to-reel.
Reel-to-reel. Now, I remember when CD Central was called Cut Corner, and it was cassettes mainly, and it was so crowded in that store because you have to have those shelves coming way out for the cassettes, those clunky, chunky things. My brother got a job once as a teenager. My mother begged him to get a job. He was such a delinquent. He got a job, and he got his first check, like $120, and he went to the mall, to the music store, and bought cassettes with all that money. He spent it all on cassettes, which was like five cassettes back then. I mean, they were expensive. You know, you remember when cassettes were like $15?
Yeah. My memory is no. I think that you're from another dimension.
That's true. In
cassettes
many ways.
Were like $8.98, mm-hmm. and like they never dominated at Cut Corner. It was mostly records. They had lots of cassettes, right?
Yeah, lots of cassettes. But yeah. My brother went to the mall though to spend his
hard-earned that's different.
Money.
That might have.
Yeah, they were more
you're talking
expensive
about
out
the,
there.
That might have been. Not Waxworks, but what was it called? Record something. Anyway,
I don't
this
remember.
Is when you could buy music in stores.
That's when there were many malls.
I remember when I was a kid, I would record the radio on
yeah.
my tape player, mm-hmm. and then I
were
would
you like
keep...
waiting for your favorite song to come
yes,
on?
Yes.
You had to run across the room, knock
like,
things over.
Itchy finger, just waiting to hit that button so that you could have your own copy of your favorite song recorded off the radio.
And I could listen to it whenever I wanted.
Anytime.
Yeah, over and over. Yeah.
Which made it doubly bad when the DJs talked over the music, which I always hate. And it's like, now you're talking over it. It's on my tape forever now. I hear you going, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear the song.
Right.
Yeah, so when you did you ever put the boom boxes next to each other and record from one to the other? Because you could cut the commercials out that way if you're really diligent.
Wow.
Yeah.
One boombox to another, like facing each other?
Yeah. Yes. And the sound was not as great, obviously, because you're transferring from one physical machine to another physical machine. Ah, the 80s.
It just sounds like it would have been fine. How could the sound quality have been terrible at all?
Yeah. Somebody across the room drops something. Now that's part of your tape. The sound of the dropping of something is now part of the song.
Yeah, that was a thing for... I had a bunch of tapes that I just made myself, and I would make the little paper insert.
The whole thing. The real mixtape.
Yeah,
These are like real mixtapes.
Mixtape.
Yeah,
There's nothing quite like a
term
a
that's still quite popular, by the way. You know, but it doesn't refer to tapes anymore, except for a tiny sliver of population known as WRFL DJs, and they still are making mixtapes.
Well, my daughter bought a Mac DeMarco album, and if you're young, you know who that is. I only know because I have a 19-year-old daughter, and she bought one of his on cassette. He is really good. Yeah, he's really good.
He's a good little popster. He's in RFL's Playbox frequently.
Yeah, she got his stuff on cassette. And another group, Enjoy, she likes. Again, I'm 45. I don't know. She's 19.
Is
so.
It called Enjoy She Likes, or is it
just
called Enjoy?
Just Enjoy. Okay. Yeah, just Enjoy. And Wyatt Shears, and I don't know. I know all these names from her talking about them. She bought some cassettes. They came in the mail.
Really?
Yeah, they were like $10 a piece. Yeah, and Fantastico Records, which is an offshoot of Johnny Conqueror, one of our favorite local bands, they have Fantastico Records, and they're pumping out cassettes for stuff that they produce.
Yeah. This is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL, getting more and more trivial all the time. I'm here with Leif Erickson, and Becky Alley is here, too. Becky has a show opening tomorrow with Melissa Vandenberg. Who and are we going to give Melissa a chance to defend herself for not coming in?
Oh,
or?
Man. Yeah. Well, she's got a really good excuse. She is in Luxembourg right now. She's a finalist for the Luxembourg Art Prize, which is a big deal. And she's in the running. I think there's 8 or 10 of them.
Wow.
And they're from all over the world.
Luxembourg, Kentucky, right?
No.
She couldn't even call in from Germany? Come on. Where's her dedication to WRFL?
Its own country. Do you know that? It's a little...
Oh, you know, I didn't. Geography. It comes back up again.
I know.
I think I principally know of Luxembourg because I was a French student, and for some reason it came up in French. I don't think they even speak French there. But
well, they speak a few languages.
But it's a tiny, tiny country.
It's tiny, tiny, and they have... Yeah, I don't know much about it. I've already said more than I know.
So that's where she is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A legend.
Yeah, and we're rooting for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then when's she coming back? In time for the opening?
I think she's got to miss it. Yeah.
That's so rock star.
We were talking about Skyping her in. I know she was really heartbroken about it, but I mean, what are you going to do? Uh-huh. They paid for her ticket to go over. And I think the reception in Luxembourg is the same. It's the same day. I don't think it's the same time because they're probably 8 or 9 hours ahead or something. But it's the same day. And then sometime on Saturday, they'll find out who the winner is. But the winner wins like €25,000 or something. It's a big deal.
Fantastic. So, Melissa is your How would you describe it? This is not a collab. Is this a, would you call it a collaborative exhibit or a tandem exhibit? Is there a difference?
I would call it, yeah, there's different ways to do group shows and stuff. I do think it was collaborative because we really did talk about how to sort of put our work together in a space. And the way that it's installed, the work is integrated together. It's not like I have half of the room and she has half of the room.
Okay.
So there were a lot of conversations about how our work connects and how it's really different. I mean, my work is kind of solemn and serious, you know, and she can be really playful and funny and kind of biting and satirical. You know, she's got, for instance, one of her pieces is a stuffed monument made out of an American flag. And I don't know.
It's not laying on the floor, I hope.
No, it's standing. You know, it's standing erect, but it is a soft and chubby thing that.
You know, I'm really interested to hear some of to see your all's interpretations of some of these things. The American flag thing reminds me, as a follower of this kind of, I don't want to say trivia, but ephemera kind of. There's some pretty peculiar things about the American flag that that I'd love to talk to her about.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Of course, most people know the one where it's not supposed to touch the ground.
Right.
Also, in photographic depictions and in illustrative depictions, drawings, it's supposed to be, and I quote, I use the word unfurled, which means it's supposed to be waving. There's not really supposed to be pictures of a flat, emblematic American flag. It's
really?
Supposed to be waving.
That's fascinating. Well, yeah, I'm sure Melissa could speak to that because she uses the American flag in a ton of her work. Mm-hmm. And just the color scheme of red, white, and blue. She's actually married to a former Marine as well. So she's got a real personal connection to military service. My work is kind of more directly about military and war, although part of that's because I don't feel a particular connection to it. But yet, I think the military is used as a political tool on both sides to kind of amp up a crowd or amp up, you know, the support, like that when people are running for office or when they're in office, I think a lot of times they use war and and the military kind of, I don't know, it's just part of a game. It's like the way that politics are talked about in this country, it's a sporting event, I feel like, more than anything, and that the military just gets thrown in there as a part of the game, kind of. And I think that we lose touch of what's actually happening and the fact that people are actually dying. And it's just, you know, it's not really taken seriously. It's just manipulated for one's own political gain.
Have you ever been to Camp Nelson?
No.
I highly recommend that you go there.
Okay.
Well, you know, so there are lots of others, but I went there only within the last month. I happened to be driving by. This is most of the way, is it past Nicholasville or no? It's between Nicholasville and here, and it's a national military cemetery,
right? Okay,
and it's breathtaking. It's breathtaking.
Well,
all these national military cemeteries are breathtaking because of the uniformity of it, the absolute incredible expanse of the graves, and I'm sure some of that's on purpose.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, for some of the same reasons maybe you do what you do.
Well, I think part of the reason why I'm here is because you posted pictures from there on Facebook, and I was like, hey, I want you to see the work I'm making.
Oh, right.
And you said, hey, come on the radio and talk about it.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm also really interested in the idea of beauty and memorials and how and what the relation – it's sort of a fraught relationship between the beauty of the memorial and then kind of the tragedy of the death. And I'm interested in that relationship, and I'm interested in, you know, can something be beautiful and also be, represent the tragedy or the ugliness of something?
Absolutely.
I don't know the answer, but
I think it's a great question. I love that question too.
Yeah.
Have you seen Harold and Maude, the movie?
I've seen the play. But,
okay. Well, there's a really cool scene in the movie involving the soldiers' graves, you know, gravestones. I won't try to recreate it here. I'll just run it. But you should watch the movie. It's it's fantastic. And there's this kind of breathtaking. It's not a big scene. It's like a few seconds of the movie, but it involves those soldiers' graves, and it's quite moving. Actually.
Yeah.
Becky, it's always great to talk to you, and I can't wait to see your show, American Mortal. Along with Melissa Vandenberg. Yeah. It opens tomorrow, right?
It opens tomorrow, and then we're also going to give a gallery talk on October 6th, which is a Thursday.
Okay.
So if you want to hear us talk more about it. And Melissa will be there. She'll be back from Luxembourg at that point.
Right.
Hopefully a winner.
Yeah. Yes. That's what we're hoping. But thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So people, if they want to find out more, I know there's a Facebook event. Where, but basically, we're talking about tomorrow at 5.
Tomorrow, 5
at the Moreland
Gallery,
which is kind of in the Netherlands of Trancy, but it's their main gallery.
Yeah, and they have, I mean, if you go to Trancy's website, then you can find Moreland Gallery there and an address and all of that stuff. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you.
This is Trivial Thursdays. I'm your host, Mick. Thanks for tuning in, and to Becky Alley for coming and visiting. We're going to take a little musical break from the genre of music called Nortec, which is kind of Mexican techno. Some of the best graphic design and coolest beats and loops and stuff. I just love that stuff. And I used the Festival Latino as an excuse, as an excuse to play it, really. Sarita Begley is here to tell us what's really going to happen.
Hola, buenos dias. Hola.
Buenos dias. Sarita, it's great to see you.
Great to see you, too.
Did you know that we, if we can have a momentary tangent, because the opportunity is here, we found a job for your husband, who's sometimes called the Indiana Jones of Kentucky, Chris Begley. Who is an archaeologist at Transylvania, right?
Yes, that's right.
So we want him to find Muhammad Ali's Olympic gold medal, which is at the bottom of the Ohio River off the banks of Louisville, where he threw it in after being denied a glass of water in Louisville many, many years ago.
Okay.
Having come back from an Olympic gold medalist and being refused to be served. In the late 60s.
Right.
Oh, I want to see that medal. So that
means it's in there. It's in the river. Yeah,
unless somebody already fished it out. Who knows? I don't know. Somebody may have already found it. I'm sure it's a valuable thing to have.
I'm sure he'd be interested on that. Yeah, he's been doing a lot on the water.
So we can get a verbal commitment for you on his behalf. He'll do that, right?
You can say it's happening.
You know, Muhammad Ali defeated Leon Spinks for his third heavyweight championship today, actually. Not today, but today in history.
And he was the first, and maybe he was the first guy to win the heavyweight championship three times in a row.
I think that's true. Yeah. Except me, but not a lot of people know about that. I try to keep it to myself. I don't want to brag.
That's a different kind of heavyweight thing,
right? Yeah, it's like a gunslinger. People come up to me and challenge me. Once they know I'm the heavyweight champ, they want to box. You know, and I'm retired.
Okay.
Not from radio. Not yet.
Yeah, radio is not a visual medium, folks. Yes. But you would know the joke if you saw me. If you don't know what I look like, the idea that I'm a heavyweight boxer. Heavyweight part, true. The boxer part, not so much.
Oh, you left out the boxer part. I just thought you meant heavyweight.
I do put things in boxes sometimes, if that counts.
Sarita, help me out here. This guy's he's out of control. Leif Erickson is here, by the way. I'm always happy to have you here, Leif.
Hello.
And so Leif is here to help keep things off track.
I tend to do that, whether in the classroom or out.
Doing good so far.
Sarita, have you been involved in organizing the Festival Latino in past years?
Yes, I have. I fully organized it on 2014, but previously I've participated representing Honduras because, you know, each year different countries from Latin America are invited to set up a booth that is focused on that specific country that has memorabilia, like souvenirs, information about the country. So I used to do that. And then 2014, I was contracted to organized the festival.
Okay.
And now I'm on the board of the Foundation for Latin America Culture and Arts, which is the organization that partners with Lexington Parks and Recreation to put up the festival.
Okay.
And they've been on it for 16 years. They only have been 14 festivals because it was canceled in 2001 for obvious reasons. And 1 year it was such a bad weather, it was canceled. So this is the 14th edition, but the festival's been going on ever since 2000.
Amazing. I can only assume that the growth has been enormous.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, very big.
Where did the festival, has it always been where it is, or was it somewhere else?
The first year was at Triangle Park, and it was not big enough. And so immediately was moved to the Courthouse Plaza, you know, in Limestone.
Yep.
And it's been there ever since. And last year, the year before, we also had it at the Fifth Third Pavilion simultaneously. But for logistic reasons, this year it's going back just to the Courthouse Plaza. It was just very difficult to manage everything.
And wait, you didn't have it at the what do we call it again? The Fifth Third Pavilion. That wasn't last year, was it?
It was in both locations.
Oh, both. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, and the year before as well. But you know, it kind of
sounds like a logistical nightmare.
It was. It was, and it kind of you know, the quality of feel, it was not as good if you just have it concentrated one place, because you can be paying attention to both sides, and if there was a sound problems, electrical problems, or whatever, it was hard to manage it fast enough. So we're happy to just be back to the Courthouse Plaza, where we can, you know, be more on top of it, and
where you can more easily manage the tens of thousands of people that come down.
Exactly. Yes, and that was another thing too, the having people going back and forth. We usually get between 30,000 to 40,000 people each year. So it's massive. It's a lot of people.
It's awesome. I love it.
It is really fun. Yeah. We definitely enjoy it every year. We look forward to this time of the year. We know we all get to see our friends, because some people only see them at the festival. You go without seeing them the whole year, and then you know they're going to be at the festival. So it's like a huge party, family reunion kind of thing.
Well, you know, I was just going to ask about that, because I just enjoyed, along with many other thousands and thousands of people, the Roots and Heritage Festival, which I would like to give a tip of the hat to, because I adore it so much. And that was last weekend downtown.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I have become aware of over the years, and gradually getting to know some of the people involved in it, is that it has a very real family reunion quality. And a lot of people actually do come back to Lexington for Roots and Heritage Weekend. And I wonder if that might be true for the Festival Latino.
Yes. Yes. People come from Chicago. I mean, from Tennessee, from Indiana, from, you know, different places to come to the festival, because it's the largest Latino festival in the region. So we have people travel, you know, several hours to come and be with family, with friends, and enjoy the music and the culture, because, you know, the visuals and the sounds and the food is just very unique to the culture. And that kind of transports you back home to be around these people who speak the language. Because, you know, even if you speak good second language well, it is still an effort to your brain to process the information and share the information that you want to. But when you speak in your native language, it's just so effortless and just so relaxing and enjoyable. And having that even for a weekend is really exciting. And, you know, we want to share also with the rest of the community what we have to offer when it comes to arts and music and cuisine and the visuals. The clothing is just exquisite. It's so beautiful, colorful, and exciting. So, yeah, we look forward to the festival every year, and I think many people look forward to it, not just Latinos, but the community in general.
Well, can we talk a little bit about Latinos? You yourself are Honduran, I believe,
sir.
Right?
Yes.
So, obviously, there's a lot of people in Lexington who have migrated here from Mexico. But when we say Latino, really, it's much broader than that. Would you say?
Absolutely. And we actually include the Caribbean as well in our celebration. Jamaica is going to be represented this year, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Cuba. And some of those countries, they don't even speak Spanish as their official language in their country. Brazil. You know, they speak Portuguese and they always participate. This year we actually have a samba performance, which is different than Zumba. Samba, you know, is the carnival Rio de Janeiro type of performance, and Ivania Portillo is going to be doing that. And so
it's the best thing ever, as far as I'm concerned.
It's fabulous. And the clothing, you know, the feathers, the headpieces, they're massive. It's pretty spectacular. And she's bringing all that, full costumes and everything. It's very diverse. And, you know, people say Latinos, and they mainly think of Mexicans. But even within Latinos, there's a lot of diversity. I mean, I'm Afro-Latino myself, and our music and cuisine and weight of dress is very different than the rest of America, than Latin American, and it has more Spanish influence. So, we have Japanese and Peru. A lot of people from the Middle East and Honduras, actually, the most powerful families come from Lebanon or some other neighboring countries, and they've been in Honduras for over 100 years. So, yeah, we have a lot going on.
So it's an incredible, it's an incredibly multicultural festival.
It is, yeah, absolutely.
And the word festival comes from French and Latin for fest, meaning feast, and VAL meaning valis, Latin meaning valuable. It's a feast to celebrate something worthy and valuable. So it's perfect that such diversity here from all these different places and cultures, and it's something to celebrate. It's a wonderful occasion, feast, literally.
Yes, exactly. And I learned something new today. See, well, thank you for that information. That is very exciting to know. Yeah, that's exactly what this is a big celebration. It's going to be plenty of food. Several local restaurants are going to be vending in. Of course, we have the margaritas that you can't have the party without the margaritas. And then there's food from different countries as well, you know, not just Mexico, but Central America and South America. We're looking forward to see everybody this weekend. Tomorrow is the opening ceremony with the Parade of Flags. And
when's that?
Tomorrow night. Friday night. I'm sorry. It's starting 6 p.m. We have different performances. Some schools are performing. Morton, Bryan Station, Northern Elementary, Carnavalley. So it's very family oriented, of course. The children are welcome. Their children's activities. And we have also music works are going to be performing tomorrow night, which is orchestra with a lot of Latino children that are part of it. So we're excited to have them for the first year. This first year, they're going to be involved. So.
Well, I'm so excited. I'm so excited, Sarita. I love how family friendly it is. I mean, family values, customs, and opportunities are all things that figure heavily into Latino culture, it seems to me, embracing the whole family.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's all about the family. We come like in troops. So whatever, you go to an event, you bring the chicken, the dog, you know, the baby who just have who's a week old, the grandmother, everybody comes. So, yeah, we're all about just, you know, bringing everybody together, enjoying each other's company, dancing, singing. Even if you're not the best singer, if you want to sing, just go ahead and put it up there. There's no shame. And so, yeah, we're all about family being together. And celebrating every day. Every day is a party, you can say that.
Right, yeah.
Yes.
And especially this weekend. So it's Friday night, Saturday.
And Sunday. And Thursday, actually, we also have the film festival that's tied to it. And it's tomorrow night at the Kentucky Theater with a reception that starts at 6 p.m. And then at 7, we'll be showing the film Club Frontera, which is about the Xolos, which is a team in Tijuana. They really helped change the culture, the violence that was going on there related to drug trafficking. So there is a documentary that was made, and it is really inspiring. You know, just young kids that had not much to do, not many opportunities. They came together and formed this team that even became a national champion. And so we'll be showing that at 7 at the Kentucky Theater. Sunday at the Master Station Park is the family day, which and that always I look forward to share that with the Lexington community, to come and see how, you know, we want to be a part of this community, want to share so much, we have so much to give. So yeah, that's always the main thing for me.
Yeah,
is the people.